Mr. Chairman, I'm going to address today the aspect of the use of gypsum that is not often spoken about, and it's got nothing to do with sodium particularly. Gypsum occurs in two main streams, either mined or industrial, and flue gas desulfurization gypsum, because of the strategic location of all the power plants that are scrubbing gases, is now a commodity that's available readily all over the country. It's cheap, usually less than $10 a ton at source. It dissolves rapidly, more rapidly than the mined gypsum, and is very pure, better than 95% pure, and meets all the environmental regulations. Just to compare it, it's not lime. It's much more soluble than lime, therefore can move in the profile and do many things that calcium carbonate cannot do. It's 170 times more soluble than lime, and the flue gas gypsum dissolves much more rapidly, you'll see there, than mine gypsum, which is very important in the application I'm going to focus on. So, first of all, let's review what are the processes responsible for erosion. Well, the first thing you've got to have soils that contain dispersible clay. And you can see there are five tubes up there. Three of the soils disperse and two don't. Two come out of a forest, three were out of cultivated land. And these are all eastern soils. And you'll see that three of them dispersed, and those are the ones that will respond to a surface application of gypsum. The two that flocculate, the structure is good already and doesn't need any improvement from gypsum. The second thing that's required is the impact of falling raindrops that introduces the energy into the system to stir the soil at the surface, which causes a seal to form when the clay particles block the pores. And you can see on the left what happens there is that the infiltration rate decays rapidly during a rainfall event, and the water in the light coloured area is the amount of water that enters the soil. The remainder of that rectangle would be runoff, and that's what's important. So the textbooks tell you that erosion is a physical phenomenon, but it has a very important chemical antecedent, which is clay flocculation. So the chemical nature of the soil is very important in terms of determining its physical behavior, and we all know that ions like sodium and potassium are dispersive, and ions like calcium and aluminum flocculate the soil. But every soil has a stability diagram in terms of exchangeable percent of sodium on the vertical axis versus electrolyte concentration divides that that area into two segments. The one is decreasing permeability in the upper part, and the other is stable. And it's important that we maintain our soil in the stable part of that diagram. And even at very low exchangeable sodium levels, 1 or 2%, if the electrolyte concentration is low enough, the soil can still disperse, and that's what's very important. So what role can gypsum play? Well, here's a little experiment. Let me see if I can get this thing to run now. Have we got it? We have to use the mouse here. I thought this might happen here. Here we go. No, there it is. You'll see from right to left is increasing gypsum, and over time you can see how that causes that dispersed clay to flocculate. And it's a dispersed clay that is the enemy in the soil. It creates a surface seal which then reduces infiltration. So what effect can flue gas desulfurization gypsum have on crusting, infiltration, runoff and erosion, that whole cascading sequence of events? Well, there we have the same sort of infiltration curve that you saw earlier, and you can see that The time to ponding is increased by gypsum, as is the final infiltration rate. And the area between the curves represents the additional amount of water that enters the soil, which means you've reduced runoff by that amount. So gypsum can promote flocculation of the clay during a rainstorm and prevent sealing of pores at the soil surface, which determines the hydraulic conductivity of the entire profile. But the gypsum must be surface applied, and that's why flue gas gypsum is much better than mine gypsum, because it dissolves more rapidly. You have to dissolve the gypsum in that falling raindrop to get enough electrolyte to maintain the soil in a flocculated condition. And you can see there is a fairly good slope where you have the control, and compare that with surface applied gypsum, you see there's a remarkable reduction, but if you apply it on the surface, the effect is the effect is much better if you apply it on the surface than if you incorporate it. There's some examples of different soils. These are all Georgia soils. Many of you recognize the series names. Wherever we apply gypsum, we get less runoff and more greater infiltration, and less runoff and therefore less soil loss. It can also offset the effect of slope. Here is an example from this is an example from Israel, where they had a fairly good slope, and you can see slopes going up to 25-30%, and where you apply gypsum, the amount of soil loss was much less than where you did not. So gypsum can also be used on construction sites to clarify water in retention ponds before it's discharged to streams. You can see that clearly a small amount of calcium in solution from gypsum will flocculate the clay. So all they have to do is ensure that when the water runs off the construction site into the retention pond, it passes through a zone that has a lot of gypsum in, either a sump or in the furrow. Just throw the gypsum in there and you'll flocculate the water, so we can prevent that entering streams. It also reduces nutrient loss, either by volatilization in the first reaction there, where the ammonium bicarbonate, which is old-fashioned smelling salts, you can actually smell the ammonia coming off that salt, it's volatile, is captured as ammonium sulfate by the gypsum, or in the case of phosphorus, it is precipitated as tricalcium phosphate. You can see in the one curve on the left, in runoff, the amount of loss of nitrogen and ammonium and nitrate forms is reduced, as is the amount of phosphorus. And from poultry litter, the same picture on the right, and you'll notice that the curves on the right of each group is the amount of total nitrogen that's recovered from the poultry litter. So you can increase the amount of recovered nitrogen by adding gypsum. Now, one thing that improves this whole thing is polyacrylamide. And this is a cheap addition to the gypsum protocol. Small amount of $4 to $10 an acre, you can get spectacular results with this polyacrylamide. You can see here for all these different properties, runoff, erosion, nitrogen loss, phosphorus loss, and potassium loss, if you compare the control and polyacrylamide treated soil, there's substantial improvement. This polyacrylamide acts just like, it's a surrogate for organic matter. It acts in exactly the same way as the original organic matter cemented the inorganic particles together. And if you have the application of PAM and gypsum together, there's a terrific synergy, as you can see here, in terms of soil loss on both a mine spoil and a regular agricultural soil. Substantial reduction with PAM and gypsum in terms of the soil loss. Here's some USDA data from rainfall simulation. PAM's on the left. You can see the difference between the control, which is severely ruled, where the die has been inserted to show the rilling. PAM improved it some, but PAM and gypsum prevented it altogether. And that's reflected in the data in the right. Substantial slope here, 32% slope, 65 millimeter rainfall event, and you can see how PAM, and particularly PAM and gypsum together, have reduced both runoff and sediment. Okay, so in conclusion then, every soil has a unique stability diagram, and you need to know that stability diagram, in other words, how that soil behaves when you change electrolyte concentration and exchangeable sodium. And that determines whether the clay in the soil disperses when raindrops impact the surface. So if you have dispersed clay, this reduces infiltration and that increases runoff and erosion. So that sequence is very important. The engineers pay no attention, unfortunately, to the antecedent chemistry that's involved in erosion, and we need to talk to the engineers that design all sorts of structures and people working on construction sites to make sure that these two conditioners are written into contracts when they disturb soil. So gypsum flocculates clay, increases infiltration, reduces runoff and erosion, reduces nutrient losses, both N and P, and prevents transport to surface waters, reduces ammonia volatilization, and PAM synergistically enhances this gypsum effect substantially. Thank you very much for your attention. If I can answer any questions, please feel free.
Douglas.
Yeah, right.
So as long as you have a particle size of gypsum, 20-40 microns, like what you're getting with FGD in the East, would you expect the solubility of the natural gypsum that is very prevalent out here at the 20-40 micron level to be roughly the same as FGD?
The problem with the mine gypsum is it's laid down in lake beds by differential crystallization as the lake bed shrinks, and you have a mixture of gypsum and lime, and often the lime coats the gypsum particles. If you can break that by grinding it fine, so you expose the gypsum surfaces directly to the water, I think mine gypsum will work, but by and large mine gypsum was never ground that fine, I mean except for certain purposes, in many cases much coarser. Like, I think your stuff, your gypsum, USG 500, or those are big parties. They're useless. So the fine stuff, I think, will work like the flue gas, but I personally have never worked with that. Yeah.
The calcium sulfate diagram,
Gypsum is gypsum.
Right.
The fineness is a different matter. Yeah. George.
Malcolm, I was interested in your comment.
Yeah, very little, George. They way below the problem. There are two problems here. We have no governmental regulations requiring that are targeted at gypsum. So we've got the 503 for sewage sludge. I mean, it's way below all that. There are a couple of other standards that the EPA has put out for arsenic. It's substantially below that, and in fact, the NRCS, it's now, there's a national protocol, the code 333, NRCS code 333, that has recently been promulgated in January of this year, and it's for the states now to fund that in order to get subsidies to the farmer to use gypsum. So it's all kosher. Yes, but it's not much, and the boron leaches out usually in the stack, when it comes out of the plant, it's stacked. The boron being so soluble is leached out. So I've never encountered a problem with boron. There is some boron in it. Yeah, I know. That's you've got 500 million tons of it there. But that's not even a concern. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I stand up here and I don't care. I'm old and they can't do anything to me anymore. I'm going to say this. The EPA passed a stupid regulation for phosphor gypsum. The regulation says if you've got more than 10 picocuries per gram, it's banned. If you've got 9.9, you can eat it. What stupidity is that? I don't know. And I've been at congressional hearings when this was all aired, and nothing ever happens. So it's just frustrating for me. Any other questions? Yeah, you've got to prepare the soil at different ESPs and measure the hydraulic conductivity and have a certain cut point that you'll accept and increase the electrolyte concentrations to offset that and then draw that curve. It's a bit of a tedious process to do, but it's been published. The original papers by Quirk and Schofield, I think, 1956, I think.